It's 4:43, time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company at 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan with us in studio, like we do on Tuesdays. Hello.
Hi. How's everybody doing?
We're just dandy. How are you?
You're wet. I know you are. Ooh. Everybody out there in Radioland is
damp,
soggy.
Yeah.
It's so Maine right now. It's so Maine it hurts.
I love days like this. I don't want
when
five
I have
of them
nothing
in a row.
To do, which is never a thing. Right. I mean, if I could have just snoozed all day and occasionally picked up my latest tome, which is Football for a Buck.
Isn't that a great book?
It's a great book.
God, that's a funny book.
So,
some of the stories.
So that was a good acquisition as well. But I would love to have that and be opt to snooze off at any given time. That would be totally fine with me. The cat that we were speaking of before we came on, I would snuggle up with him, and because he doesn't like other animals, but he loves me.
Well, yeah.
As a heat source. that's cool. I accept that. Like, I have so many unredeeming qualities. The fact that I can be, at least, you know, for my cat, he sees me as like, oh, you feed me and are a source of heat. Therefore, I do not hate you.
I mean, that's from a cat.
That's like a win.
Yeah.
Especially from a cat.
That's about as much of a connection as they forge with anybody.
That's all true. That's all true. And I was, yeah. So, and it seems to be that time of year. Yeah. Where it's, you know, you want those animals to snuggle up with and blah, blah, blah. And so I'm facing it on all sides from the, you know, my wife and my kids. Everybody's like, oh, we gotta get more animals. I don't know. If dad didn't end up cleaning up after all the animals, as well as my own, little animals, I probably wouldn't have as big a deal with it, but whatever. So, before we get into wine, on behalf of Giants fans everywhere, we're looking for a quarterback. So if anybody knows one, like even a high school quarter, I don't care. It's JV. Just, have him call Giants management and, maybe set up a tryout. That'd be good. I appreciate that.
Nike might be able to get you in contact with a.
You know, and I to be honest, I think that's one of the one of the few ownership groups that could easily navigate that sort of a thing, in that climate. But we'll see, because it's pretty sad, and you know, yeah, I mean. I believe it was around, well, a couple months later, but on this very show that I found out they were going to bench Eli last year for another washed up person. And I thought that was crazy. And now I'm like, maybe you're onto something.
Yeah.
I just don't know anymore. What I do know about is wine. Let's talk about wine.
Sure.
So, as you all recall, we were talking about California last month, and talking about all the wonderful things that California does and is and produces. And, we talked about the big heavy hitters and the new innovative stuff that's going on there. This month, we're going to sort of spend on the rest of the U.S. and talk a little bit about what's happened here and what the future looks like. As you recall, of course, 80% of the wines that come out of America are made in California. So as we start to venture around, we're going to talk about some still major wine regions, but not nearly on the scale of production as we had been talking about, which is pretty cool, because now we're going to start to talk about areas that are really devoting themselves to certain type of varietals, really for a very specific reason, for climate reasons, for things like that, as opposed to California, which can pretty much grow up just about anything because of the diversity of the climates there. So the first thing we're going to talk about is sort of the greater Pacific Northwest, and then we're going to hone in a little bit on Oregon today. The real start to the viticulture area that we know as sort of the Pacific Northwest started a long, 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 long time ago with a gigantic lake, which was over much of what is modern-day Montana. It was called Lake Missoula. And what was holding it in place was a gigantic ice dam. How gigantic? It was about 2,000 feet tall.
Wow.
2,000 feet tall ice holding back a lake that covered most of one of the biggest states in this nation. It burst about 40 times over 2,000 years, which, when we're talking about the lifespan of the Earth, is a blink of an eye, right? So that's repeated deluges of this massive, massive amount of water sweeping through all the low-lying areas in what is now Washington State, Oregon, and depositing just huge, what we call erratics, right? So rocks that don't belong in a given area and they are there because they were dumped there by the force of nature a long, long time ago. The dam was known as the Grand Moraine, and so you hear that reference to all over. Because this magnificent sea sort of flooded over and over and over, when we're talking about the viticultural areas here, we're really talking about the type of maritime soil and marine bed soil that was, you know, left there. And of course, as we, you know, in this part of the world, we have a lot of these former glacial lakes, and we can see, you know, from the very huge boulders that we can see scattered about everywhere to very, very fine particulate, how, you know, large rocks and soils get deposited when things like that happen. So obviously we're going to be talking primarily about Oregon and the Willamette Valley today, but as we talk more about the Pacific Northwest just in general, just bear in mind that a lot of these AVAs were established primarily to recognize the type of soils that were deposited there, you know, thousands of years ago with these cataclysmic floods. Excuse me. So Oregon. Oregon is extraordinarily fertile, just like California. Those floods deposited really, really wonderful soils that are tremendous for growing a lot of things. And, of course, there's a fairly sort of back-to-earth agrarian sentiment that exists in that part of the world. And, of course, if folks kind of, you know, Portland is sort of the focal hub of everything, and the Willamette Valley sort of stretches kind of going southwest from there. And that's where all the, you know, the little sub-Appalachians really are, just outside of the main city. And of course, as I said, you know, they kind of have a very sort of progressive mentality there. They first planted grapes there in 1847, so not too long ago. Obviously much more recently than they were starting to plant them in California. But originally they thought that this area was going to be too cold for traditional viticulture, right? So they basically didn't bother. You know, because of the, you know, there was cool sort of wet winters, warm, dry summers, they're thinking, well, maybe not. And what they started to do is plant things that were approximated in other parts of the world, right? Like, so when, again, kind of going back to the California thing, immigrants were coming there for all sorts of reasons, and they happened to bring grapes. They brought the grapes from their homeland. Now we're talking about much more targeted planting. They're like, all right, what is this place like? And what it's like is Burgundy, more than any other place in the world. And very much in the, not only the microclimate, but the types of soils and the type of results that you get. Although there is a sort of a loam, it's called Jory loam or Jory dirt, that imparts a slight more rich quality to it in some of the more well-respected little micro AVAs. But basically, you're talking about the closest to, you know, Pinot's real heartland that you find anywhere else in the world. And so that's really what they started to stick to, is the Pinot family, right? So not only Pinot Noir, which is definitely the undisputed king, but Pinot Gris has done very well there. Pinot Blanc has done very well. And then, of course, Chardonnay, which is the official white grape of white Burgundy, is starting to see more and more planting there. And it worked, right? And early on, they were planting clones that were versatile, and they produced nice wines. But then they really started to target the grapes and really produce specific clones designed for this area. And again, of course, grapes highly mutatable, so they can, you know, in a lab, really, you know, structure the grapes that they're going to plant purposefully. And they're all grafted because, of course, phylloxera is there, and it would destroy the vines if they did not graft onto Europe or onto rootstock. So yeah, so they took these wonderful European grapes, figured out the right clones, grafted them onto American rootstock, and they've had tremendous success. And especially since, you know, really the mid 80s, early 90s, you've really started to see wines of an international nature and reputation. You've also started to see international investment in that area because of that. Probably the most famous is the Drouin family from Burgundy. Roger Drouin and his daughter Véronique have been making wines since, I believe, the mid-90s, to extraordinary success. Wines that rival the wines that they make at home. Also Evening Star Vineyards, things like that. Again, very, very famous winemakers that are, you know, not only putting their skills to work, but have money people behind them that are allowing them to you know, do the latest and greatest things that they need to do. The other thing that they're doing, which I think is kind of interesting, and as I wrap up here on Oregon, I'll sort of touch on this, is that there's a lot of new efforts to reclassify growing in line with nature in not just in Oregon, but in the Pacific Northwest. And so we'll touch a little bit more on them again next week when we talk about Washington. There's something called Salmon Safe, which has been around for a while now. And that is, it's not just a wine movement. It's a movement about agriculture in general, trying to convince different facets of the agricultural industry, including winemaking, to reduce runoff and make streams safer for fish, which is obviously a big part of not only the tourism industry there, but of course, you know, groundwater is important to all of us, let's be honest. There's also something there called live certification, and live is, again, it's an attempt to, we've talked a lot about how organic isn't necessarily the best, or sustainable, you know, this or that, the other thing, aren't necessarily the best practices. They're just codified in a way that people feel comfortable and warm and fuzzy about them. So this live certification that they have out there is essentially the same sort of thing. It's basically what we talked about in France called lut raisonné, which means minimal and only if you have to, use of certain EPA-certified chemicals to deal with things, otherwise natural, biodynamic, etc. Kind of interesting, just seeing how they're trying to rewrite and make common sense laws or practices that Americans can get their head around, and indeed people around the world get their head around, because they're not just trying to sell to Americans. So we are drinking the Soter Family Vineyards Planet Oregon Pinot Noir. So the Soter family, also very well respected. I think their first plantings were in 2002. They started this Planet Oregon project in 2009 to make, an everyday drinking Pinot that, you can afford on a Tuesday and don't feel silly for doing it. Although, you know, I'm an advocate of drinking good wines on Tuesday too. Mm. But this is a very lovely intro to good Oregon Pinot Noir that the Soters are overseeing.
This is wonderful.
It's really nice. Mm. Yeah, it's a flower day and biodynamically, so it's showing very prettily. Before I run out of time, I want to mention that we do have a tasting this month, of course, on the 18th from 5 to 7 p.m., and we'll be tasting wines, as I said, around this theme of the rest of the U.S. And also, I want to mention that we have a really cool wine of the week called Mother of Invention from Kivelstadt Cellars. It is a 50-50 blend of the French Rhone varietals Marsan and Roussan, but it is grown in California. It is rich and silky and cool and wonderful, and I highly recommend it. It's not an inexpensive wine. It's maybe your Friday night wine, sitting as it is in the 20s, but it's really, really excellent. So check that out, and I will see you here next Tuesday.
Thanks, Eric. Eric Mann, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in Bangor.